This audio recording is protected under U.S. copyright laws. It is produced by Nichols Patrick CPE and provided by your state society of CPAs for your personal, non-commercial use. Further reproduction, distribution, or commercial use of this recording without written permission from Nichols Patrick is prohibited. Requests for permission to reproduce this material should be addressed to Nichols Patrick CPE, Suite A, 973 West Liberty Street, Hubbard, Ohio, 44425. It was an interesting week. We have a lot of things to talk about. Let's review a quick summary. We begin with a private letter ruling on the classification of drywall partitions for depreciation purposes. Then we follow that with a ruling that an S Corporation's terminating event was inadvertent and will be ignored, providing they do the right things. Then a report from the ABA meeting on a speech by David Kirk regarding the reporting form for net investment income tax, a disallowed deduction for a donated building in Ben Ali, a TC memo 2014-15, basically had some sloppy appraisals, also had a very sloppy record with HUD. Then a S Corporation ESOP was found to have violated anti-abuse provisions, and the resulting liability to the ESOP, to the individual employee owner of the S Corporation, was greater than the original tax savings from the ESOP. A mistake by a tax lawyer as to taxable IRA distributions led to a taxable distribution, which he thought should not have been. The IRS then, and that is Alvin Bobro, and then proposed regulations on partnership disguise sales and the allocation of partnership debt. Basically, new bottom dollar guarantee rules that, if finally adopted, will require a partner who executes a guarantee to actually have some skin in the game, some net worth. And then in Maisie Green, she thought she had a non-taxable payment from her employer to settle a lawsuit, but she was mistaken, as many taxpayers are. And finally, this week, we talk about the MIRA proposal that the president put forward in his State of the Union address. So let's get started with the details. Letter ruling 2014-04-001, the IRS rules that an individual's drywall partitions, which were of two kinds, zip-type partitions that could be installed and reinstalled without damage to the partition, are in Asset Class 57, which is distributive trades and services, wholesale and retail trade, personal and professional services, and eligible for five-year depreciation, while conventional drywall partitions, even though non-load-bearing, are classified as non-residential real property and eligible for 39-year depreciation. It occurred to me that the conventional drywall partitions could be leasehold improvements, and if Congress renews the 15-year straight-line amortization for leasehold improvements, we wouldn't be stuck with the 39-year depreciation, but could potentially have 15-year. Next, a letter ruling 2014-04-003, in which a company's subchapter S election was inadvertently terminated when a revocable trust became an ineligible shareholder following the death of the original settler of that trust. The beneficiary failed to make the qualified subchapter S trust election, and the S election was therefore technically terminated. The S Corporation applied for this ruling that its election, that its the termination was inadvertent, and got the ruling. I believe that this would probably be covered by the new revenue procedure, and you would not have to apply for the ruling and or pay the user fee following the following revenue procedure 2013-30. Then a report from the ABA meeting, a speech by David Kirk, who tells us that the draft instructions to Form 8960 are probably going to need changes, but they're not going to change the form or the instructions for 2013, but we can expect changes for 2014. In Ben Ali, TC Memo 2014-15, the tax court upheld the government's disallowance of a couple's claimed deduction for the charitable donation of an apartment building. The appraisals the couple submitted neither complied with the documentation requirements of Section 170F11, nor met the substantive requirements, and those failures, by the way, were not due to reasonable cause. The apartment house in question had a very troubled record with HUD. Dr. Ali was a medical doctor. He and his sister had bought the couple of apartment houses. They let the apartment houses go into serious state of disrepair. Beginning in the early 1990s, they had problems that they didn't fix. By 2000, They were notified that they'd violated the regulatory requirements and HUD was going to foreclose. They bought the mortgage out so that HUD did not foreclose, and then attempted to make a contribution of the apartment house to the Volunteers of America. In that contribution, they valued the apartment house at $1,500,000 based on appraisals which were found to be seriously deficient. And by the way, the Volunteers of America wound up within the year selling the apartment house for $60,000. So there was quite a discrepancy between the taxpayer's valuation and the real value. Tax court got this one, really got this one right. Next, Ries Enterprises, R-I-E-S Enterprises, TC Memo 2014-14. The tax court ruled that an S corporation's employee stock ownership plan violated the anti-abuse provisions of Section 409P by allocating shares of the company's stock to the sole employee and sole plan participant, and therefore the company was liable for excise taxes under Code Section 4979A. The excise tax is $161,200. The addition to tax for failure to file is $36,270, and the addition to tax for failure to pay is $40,300. So we're well past $200,000, and that was the amount of the original amount that the ESOP paid for the stock in the S Corp. The plan as written clearly qualified, but in operation, the shareholder ignored this paragraph. No portion of the trust fund attributable to or allocable in lieu of company stock in an S corporation may, during a non-allocation year, accrue or be allocated directly or indirectly under any plan maintained by the employer for the benefit of any disqualified person. And the sole employee, sole owner, was a disqualified person. So the plan read right, but it wasn't operated correctly, and the tax liability is significant. Next, we have Alan Bobrow, TC Memo 2014-21. In addition to the tax liability, this taxpayer, a tax lawyer, gets hit with an accuracy-related penalty. The two of three distributions from their IRAs were taxable. Code Section 408D3A says that a taxpayer may take only one non-taxable distribution in a one-year period. 408D3A B says that that one taxable distribution is from all IRA accounts. One taxable distribution, one non-taxable distribution, if it is repaid within 60 days. But you can only take one non-taxable distribution from any and all of your IRA accounts. And what this taxpayer did, he on April the 14th, 2008, he took $64,000 out of his traditional IRA. Then on June 10th, 2008, he took $64,000 out of his rollover IRA and repaid the first rollover. Then on July 31st, there was a distribution from his wife's IRA, and out of this distribution, they repaid number two. Then the wife tried to get the money together to repay her distribution, didn't quite get that done. The result was they had a total of two taxable distributions from their IRAs, principally because the husband, a tax lawyer, didn't read Code Section 408D3B, which says that you can have only one non-taxable distribution from any and all of your IRAs in a one-year period. Next, proposed regulations published on January 30th, Reg 119-305-11, proposed changes to the partnership disguise sale rules and the allocation of partnership liabilities for purposes of determining a partner's basis. The change changes the current rules on the treatment of partnership recourse and non-recourse liabilities in Section 752. The new rules will prevent some bottom dollar guarantees from being recognized for purposes of Section 752 and will require obligors to maintain a, quote, commercially reasonable net worth throughout the term of the payment obligation. The preamble to the proposed regulation states that the IRS and the Treasury Department are concerned that some partners or related persons have entered into payment obligations that are not commercial solely to achieve an allocation of partnership liability to such partner, and the implication, of course, is the allocation of liability to create basis and to permit the partner to claim tax losses. Current partnership disguised sale rules provide several exceptions from disguised sale treatment, and the proposed regulations add an example to demonstrate the application of a special rule under the debt finance distribution exception that treats a partnership's transfer of shares of liabilities to multiple partners as a single liability. In the preamble to the proposed regulations, we also have a provision that the treatment of a transfer should first be determined under the debt finance distribution exception, and that any amount not excluded under that exception should be tested to see if the amount would be excluded under a different exception. So we now have an ordering of the disguised sale, debt finance distribution disguised sale rules. Next, Maisie Green. First of all, we got a tax liability plus an accuracy-related penalty. Payments Maisie received to settle a lawsuit against her former employer were not excludable from her income under Code Section 104 because they weren't received as compensation for personal injuries or sickness. Now, I understand how she might have thought so. The trouble began when Maisie was injured on the job. She received workers' compensation benefits for quite a period of time and then was released to return to work, but her employer did not have to allow her to return to work unless she could pass a functional capacity exam, which she could not. So Maisie was released by the workers' compensation folks. She could go back to work, but her employer did not have work for her that she could do considering her functional capacity. Obviously, litigation followed, claiming racial discrimination and American Disability Act violations. The court dismissed the racial discrimination claim, and all that was left was the possibility of an ADA violation. And at this point, Maisie and her lawyer decided to settle. They took $50,000, which was designated as being paid for wages on a W-2, and $50,000 specified to be reported on a 1099 miscellaneous. And this, of course, is where the trouble began, because Maisie believed that the $50,000 was attributable to her injury on the job. She thought the whole thing started when she was hurt on the job, and therefore Section 104 should apply. But the court thought otherwise. Her physical injury was dealt with by the workers' compensation that she received, and when she was released from workers' compensation, her problem was not that she had a loss based on physical injury. Her problem was she had a loss because she was not physically able to go back to work. Fine point, perhaps, but Maisie Green loses and also has to pay an accuracy-related penalty. She probably got some bad advice along the way somewhere. Finally this week, we want to talk about the MIRA proposal. The president's proposed MIRA plan would be an automatic IRA targeted to low and middle income workers who lack accounts through their employers. So the employer signs up for the MIRA, and the contributions to the MIRA accounts are made through payroll deductions. The product would be offered through a familiar Roth IRA account, and the account balance would never go down in value. The security, like all savings bonds, would be backed by the U.S. government, and contributions could be withdrawn tax-free at any time. The contributions could be made in amounts as small as $25, and additional contributions as low as $5 through easy-to-use payroll deductions. And the return would be guaranteed to be equal to the Federal Employees Thrift Savings Plan Government Securities Investment Fund. Such accounts would be available to the millions of low and middle-income households earning up to $191,000 a year, offered through an initial pilot program to employees of employers who choose to participate by the end of 2014. The maximum amount that can be sequestered into such an account is $15,000, and the maximum period of time over which contributions can be made is 30 years. So after an account has reached a $15,000 balance, it must be transferred out to a traditional IRA, or after contributions have been made for a period of 30 years, the balance must be then transferred to a traditional IRA. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us, and as always, stay safe.